Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Ladies and gentlemen, two men from opposite ends of the physical, cultural, and emotional spectrums, Flats and Shanks.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 13.
Something.
Episode something of our weekly podcast. I'm David Flatman.
I'm Tom Shanklin.
Hiya, Tom.
Hi, Dave. Hi.
How
mate.
You doing?
Yeah.
How you doing?
Yeah, all right. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm better now.
Yeah.
We've just, Shanks and I have just absolutely seen off.
Demolished some wraps.
A massive lunch, actually. And for me, it was a bit too much food. I'm amazed Shanks put all that away. I went out and bought the food.
Nah. Yeah.
I thought Shanks would leave some and I'd get some of that, but I've got nothing. There's one mince pie left, actually. But
I don't like mince pies, mate.
I'll have that.
I don't like mince pies, I don't like Christmas pudding. Yeah,
I'll have that.
Mate. You can have that.
You don't like Christmas, though?
After. I do, mate. I like Christmas, I just don't like the food.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, no, I just don't like mince pies and Christmas pudding, if that's all right.
Do you like turkey?
Oh, I bloody love it.
Oh, he loves it. Look at
like
it.
Looks like you've swollen one.
Someone actually shouted at...
I think I said swollen one then.
Swollen one, you've swollen one. I've got a swollen
Swallowed one.
I've got a swollen one.
That's the one.
I remember someone shouting, Toby Booth walked past the stand at Bath at the Rec, and it was a Christmas game, and someone shouted out at Toby Booth from the stand. I was sitting in the stand doing the media stuff. And,
standard.
And someone shouted out, "Oi, Boothie, you meant to defrost the turkey before you swallow it."
Oldies are the best, aren't they?
Yeah, and it's mainly funny because somebody shouted that at me once, but now I can deflect it onto someone else.
So we've had a good day filming. We're here at the Principality Stadium, home of rugby.
Well, the home of Welsh rugby. It's wonderful stadium.
It is amazing, isn't it? You are impressed when you walk in.
No, I am. Do you know what?
It's
not about being English and Welsh and that sort of stuff, but it's a funny thing. Shanks is, by the way, he's reviled at the moment because he realises I've got him sparkling water.
No, it just took me by surprise, that was all.
Grow up, mate.
Yeah.
So, I don't care that I'm English and it's Welsh and I'm supposed to hate it. I love it. Played here once, lost once, but apart from that, I love it. And it's more about the whole atmosphere, the stadium thing. Like, you know, the average fan, or I guess listener to this podcast, would arrive at an international game or a big game and they would be super excited or nervous or in awe, but I kind of think that when you've played out there, not necessarily at the Principality Stadium or Millennium as it was then, anywhere in the big pro games, you're kind of immune to that atmosphere now, aren't you? Do you still get really pumped?
I still get to come here and watch the games and I still feed off the buzz of what it's like. It's nothing better than walking out to a packed stadium here when the roof is closed. Must be pretty intimidating for the opposition because it's noisy, there's pyrotechnics going off, it's fire.
More luckily, fire. It's generally only Wales you've got to play here, so it's less scary.
Yeah,
that's a joke.
Yeah,
it's overall though, I find it quite an interesting one. So, during the World Cup in England, or at Twickenham rather, World Cup final, I'm talking about in the semis, all the sort of ex-players gather together before those games and we get chaperoned away by very helpful people to various corporate suites and we go and have a right laugh in these places and whatever. And part of the deal is you get tickets to the games.
Yeah.
Now, I watched the World Cup final from the stand because I got a really nice seat behind the main commentators on ITV. Okay. That was just wandering past and seeing a seat. But every other game I watched in the little windowless meeting room we had above the hot dog stand where we met in the mornings before we went off to the corporate. And you go back there during the final, which I did to get some food, free food, and it's just all the ex-players are sitting in there. They're not worried about being out in the stadium. They just want to watch, see the replays, hear the analysis, and watch it in a quiet room. It's funny, isn't it?
Can I just clarify one thing? When I come here, though, I do go into a box to watch games.
Yeah.
I don't sit in the stand, so I get to watch, you know, the TV, the replays, get to drink.
Yeah.
Get to go to the toilet when I want, get to eat. So,
yeah. Do wee-wees whenever you want.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the great bonuses of being a retired player, isn't it?
It is, it is. Wee-wee when you want. Mm. So I get to experience the top level, really, mm. of the stadium, which is, I love it. It's great.
It's a lovely place.
We've just been doing some filming here. That's why we are both here.
Yeah, we were downstairs. We're upstairs now in a box. It's quite swanky, actually. It's like quite a nice little like studio flat, isn't it, in here? Very little.
Yeah, okay.
We've been filming downstairs. We're in the bath for a little bit, weren't we?
Yeah, we had a nice little bubble bath. We've been in the changing rooms. We've been down the tunnel.
Now, you might have told me this before on a podcast, but I tend not to listen to you that much. We went into what I thought were the away changing rooms, because I played here, and I think we had the away changing rooms to play here.
Yeah.
But they were the Welsh changing rooms that we're in today. So have you swapped? Are they no longer the away changing rooms?
Yeah, swapped in 2008. So when the stadium was built,
right,
we changed in, which is now the away changing rooms. Mm. Obviously, we didn't have that much success. So when Warren Gatland came in 2008, he said, you know, do you want to change things up? Do you want to, you know, a different view, different mindset? So we moved into the away changing rooms, which are just as big, probably a little bit bigger, if anything. Give it a lick of paint. Put a bit of memorabilia up there.
A couple of pictures of Tom Shanklin and you're away.
Yeah, yeah, a couple of life-size figures of me. And it's now the home change room. And actually, it might be not a bad time to swap back.
Tell you what, yeah. Or maybe swap to the Arms Park again.
Yeah, yeah, turn the pitch back round.
I want to know, because whenever I see Warren Gatland in a press conference, which is the only time, or the odd TV feature, he's reasonably quiet. And he's not that expressive, and occasionally you'll get a bit of a laugh or a joke out of him, but not much.
Yeah.
When he's doing team talks before you're running out to play in test matches, is he louder and more expressive than that, or does he leave that to Sean Edwards?
No, he is. He is. He is loud and expressive, and he is a good motivator of people, and he's a very good talker. He is quite quiet bloke, and that's often why Sean Edwards is so loud. But then you see the other side of them both. You know, so when Gatlin then is firing all cylinders and giving us a bollocking in the change room, Sean Edwards then is quite quiet, so it's good cop, bad cop, basically. But both very good motivators.
Yeah. Now, while we're on the subject of Welsh coaches, so you would have played in that change room. Can you remember any? We get loads of questions, and we'll run through a load of them later on for you if you're interested. Hopefully, you are. That's why you're downloading and listening to it. But we've got loads and loads of questions to go through. But one that pops up all the time is team talks. Who are the best in the changing rooms? And I got to say, there's one or two team talks I remember for being great. The others I remember for being hilarious. What are your kind of memories? What are your memories of those that stick out in terms of Welsh rugby here at the Principality?
I don't remember too much sort of in the middle of a game or anything like that, because you're so focused really on what you've got to do and your job and your roles and your units. So you chat to centres and backs about where the space is, what have you. But before games, there's been a couple. I think we've mentioned a couple already, but one always stands out for me because I was crying with laughter. And you know when you're crying with laughter and you're trying to hide it?
A nightmare.
Yeah, it is a nightmare. When your shoulders start going and tears are coming out of your eyes. And it was Gareth Jenkins was coach. So the great Gareth Jenkins, unbelievable bloke, lovely bloke, good motivator, good speaker, boys loved him. And he was coach of Wales, and it was 2007, and Wales lost all their games in the Six Nations. Lost to Italy, Scotland, Ireland, France, had England here at the Millennium Stadium at the time, and that was it. That was the last game. And like all teams, you're in a horseshoe waiting for your coach to speak at the hotel before you get on the bus to go to the stadium. And he walks in, and he's in his suit. his number ones. He's looking sharp. He's looking around the room. He's eyeing up the players. They're eyeing him back. You know, he's got the room. Everyone's looking at him, and he's looking around, and he's looking at people, and he's nodding into him, thinking, "You ready?" And they're nodding back, "Yeah, ready." He's looking at a couple of others, "Ready? Melon, you ready?" "Yeah, ready." And the moment's there. Just then, he turns his back, takes off his jacket.
What, to really kick into the speech?
To really kick into the speech. Takes off his jacket, turns back to face us. And I swear to you not, mate, his trousers are up by his tits. Honestly. If you pulled them up any higher, right, you'd have to undo the zip to speak. And he's got a little wet patch from where he obviously hasn't shaken it as well.
No.
After, and
he's got a little penalty spot.
Yeah, he's looking around the room and I've just gone straight away. I've looked across the room, mate. And there's Mellon, Gethin Jenkins, sat number one in the horseshoe. He's looked at me, I've looked at him, the tears are coming down my eyes, right? I'm just, all of a sudden, I've gone from sitting upright to head in my hands, down, and he's trying to ask me a question, and I can't answer him. And he's I'm going, yeah. Oh, mate, it was just one of those moments that, I am terrible like that. Anything stupid like that, I'm completely gone.
Yeah, I remember being in...
But we went on to win it, and we won the game, yeah.
There you go, enjoy your rugby, you see.
Yeah.
Enjoy it. Maybe it was deliberate. The penalty spot was deliberate.
Was it? The penalty spot was deliberate?
Deliberate, maybe. Yeah. Bit of humour. I remember being, in terms of the giggles, I remember being in huddles, and I don't have many abilities, but one ability I've got is to set Danny Grucock laughing hysterically at any point about anything. So a couple of years ago, not this got anything to do with rugby, my cat got run over and killed where I lived and in Bath, and it was genuinely awful.
Like, you better bring us back up after.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, I'm a dog person, and the cat sort of came with the wife. But I love animals. Anyway, it was a genuinely horrible, horrible day. Didn't deal with it brilliantly, and all that. And
was it run over by you?
No, it wasn't. Okay. By this bloke, okay, right? Okay. I gave it a bit of a tangent. This bloke standing there, my wife's scraping our cat up off the pavement. It was genuinely horrific. That's not a joke. Why are you laughing? It was horrific. And this bloke who ran Henry over, the cat, was just standing there, and he goes to me, "I've got a bin bag in the boot if you want that." Completely expressionless. And I was like, "No, mate, you shoot off. I know it wasn't your fault." He goes, yeah.
That's how they start, mate.
Anyway, he goes back around to his boot and comes around, and he's just got his bin liner, and he's standing there for like a minute, which is quite a long time when it's that awkward. And he goes, he bent down to my wife, who's like hysterical on the pavement. I mean, cat is...
Upset, hysterically upset.
Hysterically upset, yeah. And the bloke just says, "Do you want the bin bag?" Do you want the bin bag?
Do you want it, love?
Yeah. Why did I think of that? Anyway, so the next day, Danny comes over, and he's coming over anyway for a coffee after training.
Yeah.
He walks in, and Alex has like got puffy eyed, and she's like, "Sorry, I've been crying a bit." And he said, "Oh, that's what it's like being married to flats." It was a bit of a joke. And I said, no. I looked at him dead in the eyes and said, "Henry the cat died yesterday." And Dan had nowhere to go. He's in the middle of the kitchen. He's massive, so you can't miss him. And I'm looking at him because I know I can make him laugh.
Yeah.
And I'm not laughing. I'm genuinely upset, but I want to make him feel awful. Mate, absolutely crucified him. He bent double. He ended up crying with nervous laughter. Oh, it was great. I get him at funerals. I get him anywhere. But the words that I remember almost more than any were Phil Larder, the England defence coach. You know when England won the World Cup? And
I don't remember that, mate.
It happened.
Got out of my memory.
Yeah, so it happened, and it literally happened. And I remember him saying to me that season, it wasn't during the World Cup, but that season, England were playing France, and on the Monday, the whole 30-man squad met up Monday morning, or Sunday night, and then about Tuesday morning, something like that, Clive would pick five or six guys that weren't going to play for England and who were going to go and play for the A's.
Yes.
England A, who were down in Redruth. We were at Twickenham, they were at Redruth. So anyway, I was one of the young guys that got booted out. Anyway, we did a defence session, and I'd never done defence sessions before because at club level we didn't have defence coaches then. It sounds bizarre, but 2000 we didn't have a defence coach at Saracens.
Just get yourself in guard.
But you just whack them, yeah? And that was all we had. I mean, defence coaches were a new thing then.
Yeah.
So, Lard, we do this defence session, and... Lard, anyway, Julian White and I weren't the best defenders in the world, and we were new to it. And after we had this meeting on the Monday night, and he's like, "There are 30 men in this, 30 rugby players in this room, and I have got complete confidence at test match level in almost all of you. There are two guys in here who are not up to standard. They've got some work to do. Flats and Whitey, you've got some work to do. You're way behind the curve. And we're kind of like, that is harsh. Like, that's so harsh in front of the lads, you know.
Yeah.
He was right, anyway. So he basically said, you are not good enough. Whitey, Phil Rickery got injured, so Whitey was playing.
Yeah.
So he told Whitey he wasn't good enough, then had to pick him. And anyway, sent me off to Redruth. I get the call Friday morning of the England A game. Trevor Woodman's twisted his ankle. Can you come back? So I'm straight on a plane from wherever, Newquay, and I'm back up. And I'm straight on the bench against France. And I end up coming on a plane against France at Twickenham that day.
Another cap. Well
done.
Another
cap, yeah. Every minute counts. And I mean, in the changing room before the game, Phil Larder saying to me, walking over and saying, I believe in you. I believe in you. You're going to make your tackles. You're going to be in position. And I just said, no, you don't. Don't lie.
Slagging you off.
Don't lie. No, you don't. And I remember saying, I didn't say that. I thought that. And I just said, thanks, Phil. And look, Julian White looked at me and we looked at each other and was like, you bullshitter.
You know, well, so Phil Larder was defence coach in 2005 Lions. I don't know if I told you I was on that tour.
Whoops.
And obviously doing a defensive drill, hitting the bags and stuff. And Gethin Jenkins, very good defender.
Yeah, probably the best defensive prop in the world.
Yeah, one of them. He singled him out and he wanted us all to look at Mellon's technique. So he's going, lads, stop. Come and have a look at Giffin. Come and look at Giffin. Giffin's technique. Well done, Giffin. Well done. We're fucking all crying. Couldn't pronounce his name.
That's so awkward.
Oh, I know.
There's this old tale of Phil Larder being in a huddle and saying, it doesn't matter how big you are, you can take anyone down if you've got the desire and you get your technique right. And he's proud. Everyone's in a huddle and he's in the middle, prowling around the middle of the huddle at training. And then I forget who it was. It might have been Martin Corrie, but someone will correct me on that at some point.
Yeah.
But he just, Phil Larder's like an old, a pretty old guy at this point, not a big guy.
No.
And he just suddenly drops and like flies at Cozza to take him out, just to prove the point, because Cozza's like England captain. He's massive. Yeah. He's hard as you like, hardest bloke ever kind of thing. And Cozza's just got his arms around someone else and he just rides the hit. And Phil Larder doesn't knock him backwards. He like bounces off him, but he's still got hold of his legs. Phil just drops, and apparently his arms are still round him, and he just drops to the floor with his arms still round Cozza's ankles. Drops all the way down his legs, and he's got this. His hair's like flapping everywhere, and the boys, everyone starts laughing. Julian White can't. He's crying his eyes out. He's actually crying. And in the end, it's like, stop laughing now, because it's actually a bit disrespectful. It's embarrassing. This old guy let himself down. And Whitey can't go on, mate. He's gone. He's on his knees.
Do you remember, you might not remember him, Clive Griffiths, used to coach London Welsh, and Wales brought him in as defensive coach.
I know the name.
Yeah.
There's probably about 400,000 of them in Wales, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wasn't he a snooker player? Anyway.
2.5 million of them. He was head coach at London Welsh, and I was coming up through the ranks there before I met you. And he was obviously big. His big thing was defence. He played a lot of rugby league and stuff. And he would bring in videos of his son, who was 10 years old at the time, making hits in his games to show us how to do it properly.
It's so cringe.
I love it.
It's so cringe. I want to stay on Wales while we can. And I want to say a couple of things that you might think are controversial. I'm not a deliberately controversial guy. I don't deliberately say things to try and get noticed, but I'm going to say some things that you might not like.
It's not about my skin tone or...
It's not about your skin tone or your
colour.
Albino stuff. It's not about that.
Okay. Bulbous eyes.
Yeah.
I've had since the age of 7.
Yeah, like fish eyes or your fluorescent orange body hair. It's not about that. What it's about is, firstly...
that's a horrible thought.
That's minging, but it's true.
It's not.
Especially against the white background, it's really stark. Anyway... It's like a orange on a chalkboard, a whiteboard. Anyway, so I want to know why Keelan Giles and Tom James are watching Wales play rugby when Alex Cuthbert is in the team. I'm just not having it. They're better than he is.
Okay, so Keelan Giles is a youngster, a teenager that's been picked for Wales. He's been playing very well for the Ospreys. He was picked for the bench this weekend against Japan. I think a lot of people thought he should start. But he was on the bench and there was no room to bring him on because, I mean, we'll get to the result and the game itself later on, but it was such a tight game all the way through. There was no way really you could bring him onto the pitch because he was so young, so raw. If he makes a mistake, then he's going to be thinking about it for the rest of his career. His confidence would be shot. So it was the right decision, I think, not to bring him on. Now, Tom James is a different kettle of fish. he's been the in-form winger for the last two or three years in Wales. He had his shot, I think it was last year or a couple of years, I think it was last year in the Six Nations against
Scotland.
He started off at Ireland, then he played Scotland, didn't finish off a try down the left-hand side, was caught by Duncan Taylor, who actually is pretty quick.
Fast,
yeah. Yeah, there are fast centres out there.
Yeah,
And he's never been picked since. So it's a difficult one for him. I think it's more, it's not so much a talent clash. I think it's a personality clash that he has with the coaches, and that's why they don't pick him.
See, I heard a rumour, a sleazy rumour, that he was on a plane with the team, and I don't know if he had a beer or not. I might be throwing that bit in for the sake of it.
Do it.
But he was smashed.
Yeah.
I don't think he was, but he had a pop at the coaches, confronted them and said, why don't you pick me on this team?
I think he had a chat with the coaches as to why he wasn't being selected and his views on it. You know, he's obviously been playing well, and he's getting other players again picked above him who aren't as good and not as good form as him. So it's very frustrating for him. So it can't be down to form, it can't be down to talent, because he's got bags of it and he's playing very well in the Pro 12. It has to be a personality clash that he has with the coaches. It's not to do with the team at all. I don't think he's that Kevin Peterson-esque, you know, where disrupt the change room. Everyone loves him. He's a great guy. He just doesn't seem to get on with the coaches. He doesn't seem to be in their picture. They see more talent and, you know, more benefit picking someone like Hallam Amos.
Mm. Hallam Amos, I think, is great.
Yeah, but great player.
I just don't know how you don't pick Tom James. And you pick Alex Cuthbert. That's my point. And Alex Cuthbert was wonderful for Lions. I haven't seen that form since then. And he's big and quick and all that. But I look at him and see someone who is, and I don't like seeing it, but I see someone who's lacking in confidence, knows he's not in very good form and hasn't been in epic form the last couple of seasons, and he's worried about it. So every time he makes a mistake, his face looks like, oh God, everything's just got worse for me.
Yeah, no, he's struggling with confidence. You can see that a fair bit. You can see it in his face after, you know, he's only two or three mistakes away from crying, I think, on the field. But that's emotion coming out. That's how much he wants it. He's trying so hard to find that form, but it's just not coming.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. Yeah. It's tough. The next thing I want to talk about, if you can hear some banging in the background, by the way, there's
I think it's a cat burglar.
There's this weird guy outside this box we're in at Principality, and he's like, it honestly looks like he's trying to nick.
Should I go over and see what he's doing?
Whack him. Okay. Whack him.
I am going to go mental.
Just tell him who you are and whack him. Don't knock him over the edge though, because we don't need a manslaughter charge on the Flats and Shanks podcast, because this is witness now, effectively. Oh my God, Shanks just looked out and stuck a middle finger up at him. It was so arrogant. So arrogant. Is he gone?
Yeah.
Got rid of him. Shanks did the old throat slit signal and he went.
Gave him the look, didn't I?
Yeah, I sorted that out.
So, what are we going to talk about today, mate?
Oh no, I've got something else I want to talk to you about.
Oh right, carry
on. I want to talk to you about Rob Howley.
Yes.
Now, it's not being a great...
Hello. In the middle of a podcast. Do you mind if I'm back? Is that all right? Sorry.
All right.
Sorry.
Is that your mum? Is that your mum?
No.
This lady just came in, and normally we would say, we're recording, but she had a tray full of clunking cups. And I don't know about you, but I saw her and thought, free coffee. Turned out she had no coffee, so Shanks got rid of her and gave her another.
Is that a pull I have around her? Yeah.
Amazing.
Out. Go on, what's your point on Rob Howley?
I want to talk about Rob Howley as the main man, and it seemed a natural choice because he'd been around and knew the system so well and all that stuff. But and it isn't about press being a great head coach, it's not about press conferences and sound bites, but you do, I think, have to have some sort of, you know, sort of charismatic pull, some sort of engagement, inspirational engagement. And I think Eddie Jones has it in spades. I think Clive Woodward had it. I think Steve Hansen clearly has it. He's very droll in his press conferences, but I'm told by people I know well that know him well,
yeah,
that he's a great guy, and he's got, and you said the same thing, and he's actually very, very funny, loads of charisma, knows how to get the best out of players. I just look at Rob Howley and think, I don't know him, but what I see from a long way on the outside is, frankly, not an inspirational character who's going to get Wales out of this rut. Is he completely different from that behind the scenes?
Difficult for him, isn't it? Because he's obviously taken over the Welsh team. The form has been pretty, pretty poor. I don't remember it being as bad as this for a fairly long time. So he's under a lot of pressure, and you can see that. And you know, he's not the most charismatic behind the camera, but he was a pretty decent player, and he's pretty decent on the coaching field. So it's a tough one for him. You know, Gatland's obviously taking a year out. Rob's got the team, but it's still sort of tied to Gatland. It's not as if Rob is now the next Welsh coach for 2 or 3 years. No, he's only got the team for a year, so it's difficult. What will happen though is I think we can make a lot more judgments after this weekend, because if Wales end up beating South Africa, playing well, beating South Africa, that's 3 from 4. They set that out at the start as being a positive campaign. It will still be positive regardless of, you know, result wise, regardless of how they played.
Yeah, okay. So he stays. Yes. I don't think he should get binned. I'm not saying that. I'm just thinking, like, I look at him as a rugby fan, and I just don't think that is the right guy to be leading the Wales rugby team at the moment. And I would love to be proved wrong. We've actually got a question in on Twitter from the Scarlets rugby blog, which is kind of Welsh based, and this is quite Welsh centric so far.
Yeah.
But that's how it is. Shanks, did player power force Ruddock out of the Welsh job?
Oh, God, that's a blast from the past.
Yeah.
He might basically retire. Not retired. He resigned himself.
Mm.
He resigned himself because he thought, in his own mind, he had lost the change room.
Mm.
Players didn't force him out. The players didn't say, "Mike, it's time for you to go." He thought he had lost the change room, so therefore he resigned and left the post.
Yeah.
So
you don't think it was player power?
It might have been. It would have been a little bit of player power in the fact that they. Well, luckily I was injured that year, so it didn't. I wasn't involved in it.
As long as you're all right, mate.
Yeah,
you're okay?
No, I was fine. But I think the players felt that they didn't have the confidence in Mike to take him forward, and therefore he felt he lost the changing room and retired.
Resigned.
Yeah, and retired.
And retired.
He did.
So I remember you showing me a. You probably don't want me to tell anyone this, but I'm telling everyone. A hilarious video of Mike Ruddock, absolutely hilarious, where it was videoed by the team analysts, like on a hill above the training, a raised platform above the training ground.
Yeah.
And he'd just done the team talk or whatever, and because it was raining, I think, he went back to watch training from his car on the touchline, and it's like not even standing, he went to sit in his nice car, and actually on the way back, everyone else had walked off and was beginning to train. And he like pretended he was still a player and did these sidesteps thinking nobody was watching, beating imaginary defenders. Do you remember that?
It was we had like a motivational video basically, and a lot of it had some funny stuff on it. And
right.
Some of the funny stuff was when the players left the field, Mike just picked up a ball walking back to his car and started doing some sidesteps and some shuffles.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah.
Very, very good.
Still a great guy, mind. So, Flats. We had so many games. At the weekend.
I know.
It was an incredible weekend of rugby.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
Should we start with Ireland All Blacks?
Yeah, let's start with that. What did you think of the game?
I didn't think you would be able to top 2 weeks ago with the game that was played in Chicago, but I thought it was an incredible game. I loved it. It was a brutal, physical encounter. Now, you knew New Zealand were going to bounce back from that loss. No one puts 40 points on New Zealand and does it again. You know, 2 weeks later, and you could see that right from the start how aggressive New Zealand defence was. You know, Ireland had all the possession, all the territory for nearly 60 minutes, yet couldn't cross the white line.
Mm. And
second half, right, they had 20 minutes deep in New Zealand's half, and New Zealand just kept holding them out. Every time Ireland came back on a switch or they were looking for space, the door was just slammed in their face. New Zealand defence was unbelievably tough and aggressive, and they came away with 3 points. And then you look at New Zealand then, at the 65th minute, they scored a try. They'd had 5 minutes of pressure in the Irish half and come away with a try, and that was a difference. You know, Ireland had a few chances, and those chances stuck 2 weeks ago,
yeah.
You know, when they put 40 on them,
yeah.
But they just weren't sticking this week. But I think the biggest positive thing is that Ireland can mix it with the best. They've beaten New Zealand, they've lost to New Zealand. You know, they're certainly in the top 3-4 international teams in the world.
They look really good. I thought it was by a mile the most intense test of the weekend. I thought it was a really, really good game. And the one thing that kind of sticks out for me when I think about it is the All Blacks' response to having been conceded 40 points and been beaten the week before, 2 weeks before by Ireland. And their response to that was to defend more aggressively.
Much more aggressively, mind.
But I think they actually went further. And I'm definitely in the camp of let the lads get on with it and stop being so soft and pansying about. Mm. I'm definitely in that camp. But this time, it seemed like either a concerted effort to whack as many Irishmen above the neck as they possibly could, or they were so psyched up and so embarrassed by 2 weeks before, and that they just went too far without having been told to. And
so you're picking up on the Sam Kane hit on Robbie Henshaw.
Yeah, and the Malachi Fekitoa hit on Simon Zebo. I'm sure these guys aren't running around thinking, because if you want to whack someone in the head, you can do it anytime you want in a game of rugby.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're not running around thinking, I'm going to damage you and hurt you, but they're thinking, I'm going to absolutely push this. I'm so aggressive that I'm not going to control it and see what I can get away with. And that hit, that Sam Kane hit on Henshaw, which ended Henshaw's game.
Yeah.
I don't think he's trying to hurt him. I don't think he's trying to get him taken off, rather. But I think he knows what he's doing. He's a pro. He knows he's going high. He knows he's going head first. He knows there's a good chance he's going to get head on head. Now, I don't think players generally aim for head on head because you can knock yourself out as easy as the other guy.
Yeah.
Right? So I don't necessarily think that was his explicit intention, but I think they went too far. And I think they were dirty and cynical. And in a sense, what's new, but I think it is a bit new from this All Blacks team, because they've been the most dominant team, if not in sport, and certainly in rugby, for a long time. And they've always been kind of above this kind of stuff, so classy, so serene, they're above this. This was not a team above cynical foul play. And I when on that Fekitoa hit, everybody knew it was high. Fekitoa, as soon as he did it, stayed on his knees, hands up, and said, I'm really sorry. And he knew it, didn't argue it, he knew what he'd done. Then you got Dane Coles. You can hear him on the microphone walking around, you know, in front of the Irish players clapping, saying, great tackle, good tackle, good tackle, complimenting this hit, which might have knocked this bloke out.
Yeah.
I don't like that. And just because you're the All Blacks and you're the greatest ever, you shouldn't get away with it. And I don't like it.
That so easily could have been a red card as well, because it was a swinging arm. He got a yellow for
like
it.
Like a right hook, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. When you look at it in slow motion, it is blatant swinging arm, which goes to the head of Simon Zebo. So, you know, I wouldn't have been too shocked if the ref had shown him a red card. What I will say is that the All Blacks do tend to get a lot of 50-50s go their way, don't they, in terms of yellow cards or red cards or not being sin-binned, penalties, etc. What I will say is that they've earned that respect to get those 50-50s in their way, because those 50-50s to go their way, because they are the best in the world.
They are, yeah. I mean, I don't know, because part of me, I'll be just being completely honest, part of me likes that. Part of me likes the fact that they rolled up their sleeves and said, we're going to beat this lot to bits, because that isn't the modern version of rugby. It's not the version that the mums want to see, or that we want to show the mums that are going to let their little boys go and play rugby. But it is a lot of what made the All Blacks great. You know, in sort of Buck Shelford's day, they kicked the shit out of people.
Yeah.
And part of me, excuse my language, part of me quite likes that. And if, you know, playing for Bath or Blues or whomever over the years, you get a beating like that they did in Chicago, where you were meant to win as well.
Yeah.
You talk partly about execution and exits and processes. You're also talking about, let's batter this lot. And that doesn't mean you want to go out and hurt people. It means you want to go out and do as much legal damage as you possibly can. And
but they've shown they can mix it with the best, you know, attacking-wise and flair-wise, but they've also shown that they can be one of the most physical teams in the world.
And you can argue they've always done it. And you look at Tanner Umanga spear-tackling O'Driscoll, and there's all these things. I think they're reasonably isolated incidents over the last 10 years. I don't think there are any particularly systematically filthy teams in international rugby, because you can't be anymore. But I thought this was a brutal, but at times and overall a cynically sort of violent performance in the All Blacks, and it left a bit of a bitter taste, to be honest.
So we got Australia, France, or France Australia, should I say, 25-23 to Australia. Kurundrani's finish.
Oh my days!
There'd probably be two or three people in the world of rugby that could have finished that try. That is it.
Great game, actually, as well.
It was.
But what a finish.
Yeah, it was.
Goodness me.
It was massive. It was massive. And to be fair, I thought France were going to do it towards the end. I thought they had enough possession. I thought they did enough to win it. It wasn't the strongest Australian team out. They left out a lot of stars. But, you know, they showed a lot of heart in the end with, you know, defending for a good 20 minutes. And they defended well at the weekend.
There was an interesting picture that went around on social media of the Fijian lads, in Fijian-born players, playing for France or Australia just in that game. There were seven of them in that game alone, involved in those two squads.
I know. Both, you know, both France and Australia had two Fijian wingers playing against each other.
I mean, it's sort of, you can say it's madness, but why is it madness? It's madness because there's no money in Fijian rugby, and they'll get thousands and thousands of pounds a game to play those tests, and they'll get big contracts to go and play there domestically.
You see, should have come to Wales, mate.
Should have come to Wales, but...
Yeah, you're... Mother
but
as well.
But it, yeah, that's true. Mm. But it
how is she? All right?
She's well, yeah. Yeah, why'd you ask?
Well, just, she texts me now and again, that's all. Send her my best.
But you look at the art, we've had a couple of questions about this actually. You look at the just Fijians alone, the sort of the 15 they could put out or the 23 they could put out if everyone who was born in Fiji played there. And it is possible because the whole Fijian team is Fijian. The whole Argentinian team is Argentinian. So it is possible to do that. It's not the way rugby currently is, and residency, I think, is going to be looked at, but it needs to be looked at quick because it's kind of becoming farcical. You can play for England with England as your second language because you've just been here for 3 years is one contract, isn't it?
Yeah. Let me have a think. Shall I play for 22 grand a game or 400 quid a game?
Yeah, easy peasy.
Easy. So what you're basically saying is the residency rule should be longer than 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, 5 years is the obvious adjustment.
Yeah.
I wonder, I could get picked apart for saying this because I haven't thought about it enough, but I wonder if 7 years isn't a better idea. I mean, then if you're a 15-year-old and you don't get to play for England till you're 22, well, fine. You know, but if you're 20 years old and you arrive, that's you're an established non-Englishman by then.
Is grandparents enough? Grandparents being born in the country? Or should it be mum and dad?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it?
Yeah, should we have a think about it and then come back with a better answer?
I'm going to go mum and dad.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah.
Happy with that?
Perfect. Let's move on. Italy, South Africa. Can you believe they've won?
No.
Nor can I.
I'm really, really pumped that they have, though, because Conor O'Shea and Mike Catt will not have expected to win that game, and I'm pleased for them.
The only thing is that Wales have got them this weekend now, and for me, that is just going to massively, massively fire them up. For this weekend, we're a must-win game for them.
Yeah,
do you not think so?
Do you know what?
I think had they beaten Italy, I think that they wouldn't have learned many lessons, but they still would have won the game.
It's way harder for Wales now.
Yeah,
definitely. But I just don't look at this Springboks team and think they've got an angry performance in them. I don't think they've got that. I think they're so underwhelming at the moment. We said a couple of weeks ago that we think it, you know, we might get worse before it gets better. Well, it has got worse. I think you'd better hope it doesn't start getting better this weekend, mate.
No, I know. Well, Wales, Japan.
Dyer.
Positives.
Sam
Davis coming off the bench to slot that drop kick.
Yeah.
Do you know what I liked about that is that so many players, young players like that, wouldn't possibly put themselves in that situation, would keep looking for a penalty, would keep forwards going around the corner looking for Japan to infringe and taking a penalty, because obviously a penalty off the floor is a lot easier than having a drop kick under pressure. But he actually puts himself in that position, so it's all or nothing for him.
Yeah,
and he slots it straight through the middle with loads left. But it's an incredible moment for him, his family, his father Nigel Davis played for Wales as well, Scarlets, coach Wales one game, and Gloucester. It must be an incredibly proud moment for him, and he is one to look for the future, Sam Davis.
He's good. And do you think it ends up with Sam Davis at 10 and Dan Bigger at 12?
It could if Wales are looking to play a different way, if they're looking to play more expansively, they could look at that option, because that would be similar to England in Farrell and Ford. Dan Bigger, great 10, good ball player. Sam Davis probably a little bit more elusive, plays a little bit flatter, probably a little bit more creative. Those two could work together if that's the route Wales want to go down.
Biggest defence good enough?
Yeah, biggest defence is very aggressive.
Yeah.
It is good enough. There's enough big lumps in that back line as well to give them go forward if they want to revert back to that, you know, because sometimes you do need to take it up off the top of lineouts of the back of scrums. But it's whether Wales want to play like that.
I just like Scott Williams.
I think
you got to pick him.
Well. But whatever team they pick, they have to stick with now. They have to think, right, this is the best team. We're going to stick with it for three or four games regardless. So it gives players a chance to understand each other. You know, it gives a chance for the wingers to play in this different formation, to run off centres, to run off tens, because chopping and changing all the time does not help whatsoever. But Wales need to find their identity. What are they trying to do? Are they still trying to play this
Warren Ball
confrontational rugby where they physically make teams think, but mentally they don't make teams think? They don't challenge teams mentally. So defenders aren't worried about which player they're taking, about the movement outside of the ball. They're just seeing one-up runners come in and have to tackle them. And for me, that's too easy. Wales have to start evolving now. And I think they all realise that, but it's so difficult because they've been playing a certain way for such a long time. Nothing has really changed. They've relied so heavily on the likes of Jamie to get them over the game line that they don't know much difference. And it's going to take a bit of time for that to settle in. You know, sometimes we might have to go through some real poor periods like we are right now to get better.
Yeah.
But I think there is a realisation now that Wales do need to improve, and they need to improve their attack and their defence as well, mate. They've been leaking a few tries.
Yeah.
But that was the most annoying thing at the weekend, is that basics weren't great. So you think after Lidditt scores a try, after Jamie scores a try, after Warburton scores a try, you know, all of a sudden Wales are going to kick on and they're going to be relentless and you can see the next wave of attack. But all of a sudden then, they're throwing balls on the floor, they're having intercepts, they're losing ball off kickoff in their own half, Japan score. So they're shooting themselves in their own foot. It's fundamentals and basics that need to sort out.
On to the Scotland game
at
the weekend against Argentina.
Hugh Jones, and another good game.
Brilliant, isn't he?
You went up a level then.
Where's he been all my life, Tom? Where's he been?
South Africa, mate.
Yeah, he's been in the heat.
Born in Edinburgh, playing in South Africa for the Stormers.
Yeah.
But what a find he's been.
Oh, he's
scored two tries last week, created one this week.
Yeah. He's a great player, I like him.
All of a sudden, you look at their back line, you've got Dunbar, who I think is a brilliant player.
Do you?
Yeah, I really, really rate Alex Dunbar.
What do you like about him? Go on,
just
tell
his
us.
Hair. No, he's physical, he's got a ball playing game, he's aggressive, he's got vision.
Mm.
Not many 12s have that. And he's got pace and he can finish off tries. He's the all-round package. But you've got Finn Russell at 10. You've got him, Alex Dunbar and Hugh Jones in the centre. You look at their wingers as well. Tommy Seymour, Maitland, Hogg at 15. All of a sudden,
class.
It is a class backline. And
do you know what? There were people...
They've suddenly come alive, Scotland.
People like you and me, who know it all, were saying, how can they not pick Matt Scott, Gloucester centre for Scotland? How can they leave him out? Actually, this is how they can leave him out. They've been brilliant.
They have.
But we got an interesting question on email from Max Popley.
Yeah.
Lads, does Scotland's decision not to renew Vern Cotter's contract look more puzzling than ever, considering their autumn international performances so far? Your answer?
Yes. My answer is yes, because Vern Cotter needed a bit of time to develop this Scotland team. He has. You can start to see huge, huge light at the end of the tunnel for him. And he's put a lot of systems in place for Scotland that, you know, it's going to be great for Gregor Townsend to inherit this squad, and the level and the level and experience that he's going to inherit is far better than, you know, two or three years ago. And a lot of that is down to Vern Cotter.
It is, and I think we've said this before in the pod, I think they've played some really, really good stuff under Vern Cotter. The results haven't quite happened this weekend, but it still feels a bit odd that he's going.
That question you asked me about Bigger and Sam Davis, there was a question from Warren Thomas, could Wales try a 10 and 12 like England? So I think we answered that for him. In at the side, I've asked Chuck Norris versus Steven Seagal.
Oh, mate, it's a no-brainer.
Who's it for you?
It's Chuck Norris.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Steven Seagal only fights with his hands.
Does he?
Yes.
Is that because he's a bit of a big lad and he can't kick?
Yes. He never, ever fights with his legs.
Mate, you know Chuck knows that. You know Chuck's going to do the Street Fighter 2 turbo sweep kick.
What was that film when he was a chef? Under Siege.
Under Siege.
Yeah.
And that girl burst out, the topless girl burst out the birthday
from
cake.
From Baywatch.
Yeah, that was one of my favourite scenes as a young man. That was one of my, that was a defining movie scene for me.
Probably the reason why you wear glasses now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's why I take such pride in my own chest.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
We got a question here on email from Jack Fitzmaurice. Hi, Jack. Love the podcast. Stop at you. What is the worst slash most gruesome injury you've ever seen on the field? That is a particularly macabre question. I think I saw Danny Cipriani did a snap dislocation of his ankle. I was playing in that game, and
that was
pretty grim because his foot was facing the wrong way. That was bad, and he was in a horrible amount of pain. And I remember thinking at that point, I would do anything I possibly could. I didn't know Danny very well, but I would do anything I possibly could to stop this guy's pain. It was that bad. It was just horrific.
I mentioned one a few podcasts ago about David Jones, and he had a little mishap and shorts.
Yeah,
that was quite bad. But ankle as well. Robin Solon Taylor did one against the Ospreys.
Did he?
And again, completely facing the other way. I wasn't at the game, right, but the boys say that the worst one they've seen and heard was Chris Cheki in Australia in 2007. Has a spiral fracture of his femur bone, and they just said the noise was just incredible. It was like a gunshot. It was that bad. I know. What do you like watching injuries now when you see them in replays?
Don't watch any injuries at all.
No. Wow, do you see the Olympics? The guy doing the pommel horse. The pommel horse or the vault. He was doing a vault.
What did he do?
I think it was a French guy. He obviously runs up as fast as he can with arms going everywhere.
Yeah.
Vaults, does a twist in the air, lands, leg just snapped.
No. That's enough. Don't want to hear about that. That's bad. Let's move on. Another question from Marky Mark on email. And he said that a couple of pods ago we talked about who are the strongest teammates ever. Who the strongest guys we played with, and we missed out Andrew Sheridan. That is a good point. Sherry, incredibly strong guy. I was actually in the same year of school as Sherry, in London, and very, very strong guy from an early age. Heard once that he was Olympic weightlifter standard. Did you ever witness these heroics, and would you add him to the list? Yes, I would. Incredibly strong human being, very, very good in the gym, but Olympic weightlifter standard. I mean, I'm sure a lot of you know this, but the very, very strongest rugby players in the world are absolutely nowhere near as strong as weightlifters at lifting weights. They're absolutely nowhere near.
No.
So someone like Andy Sheridan, who was probably 120, 125 kilos, I guess 19 stones, 20 stones, something like that, someone of his weight would be lifting, if not double what Sherry lifts, they're not far off. Their weightlifters are a completely different gravy. They haven't got to run and pass and all that stuff, you know.
Before we get too into the questions, we've not touched on the England Fiji game.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you said last week that you didn't see it being more than a speed bump. It wasn't really, was it?
No, it wasn't.
I thought physically they would struggle a little bit, because the Fijians are obviously a big physical side. You look at that England backline, it's not that physical. It's pretty mobile and pretty athletic, but they don't possess the power that the Fijians do. But they didn't struggle whatsoever.
No, and I really thought Fiji might deliver a bit more. They didn't turn up like I hoped they would. Their set piece was actually better than I thought. Put them under pressure a little bit, yeah. Once or twice. There was a period where Fiji looked sharp and scored a few tries and a couple of tries, and they looked great. But that died out pretty quick. England didn't seem to struggle at all, really. And I thought the best performers, I thought Jonathan Joseph was great. Elliot Daly looked really good on the wing.
Do they both stay? That's the question.
Yeah. I think they do, because Jack Knowles not fit. I think if Jack Knowles fit, you've got to pick him. Rocco Degooni? Well, I think, yeah, the Fijian lad on the wing for England was good.
Yeah.
Rocco Degooni was good. I thought he was really, really sharp. Although the first time, because he's known for being, if not the biggest hitter in the Premiership in terms of wingers, pretty close, a powerful guy. He tried to hit Nandolo early on when Nandolo caught a kickoff. And he got absolutely brushed. That guy is a giant.
He makes huge,
yeah,
isn't he?
Yeah, he's real big. He's enormous. Like, you don't often say that anymore because everyone's kind of big. Or loads of lads are really big.
Yeah.
He is enormous. He's a giant. And
he doesn't have abs like you and I, though.
No, he doesn't look in great nick, does he?
No.
But he does a decent job.
Nor is Rupeni Thauthau. Remember him?
No.
Like, he was younger, he was. Yeah. But
he was the best even when he was real fat.
He was.
Real derby on him. But I thought England looked really good, I thought, but it was kind of, it ended up being one of those games where, you know, don't get injured because we're going to win this comfortably and it would be a bit of a waste. Joe Launchbury's been banned for 2 weeks retrospectively. Yeah. It's a tough one. It's absolutely the right decision because that is the directive, and the directive is there to protect people's heads from fly hacking behemoths. But I still feel like it's a complete accident, you know.
Just touching up. Touching up? I hope not.
Don't you touch me up again.
Just picking up on that bit of news. Liam Williams has just signed for
Saris. The rumours are true.
See, I think it's a bit of a strange sign. Right, he's going to a great club. So he's leaving the Scarlets to go to the best club in Europe. Mm. He's a 15. He doesn't like playing on the wing. He wants to play 15.
Right.
He's made that clear. 15 is his best position. He's going to a club where they've already got, I think, a world-class 15. And that's good. So how do they both fit in? Because he doesn't want to go to Saracens and be second choice and sit on the bench. He's still got international ambition, so he still wants to play for Wales. So it strikes me a bit odd that he's gone to Saracens, not because of the club, but because of the competition in his position already.
Yeah.
He'll obviously go there backing himself and, you know, thinking that he can take that slot, and he quite possibly could. But it's a difficult one, isn't it?
See, I think
it's strange.
I heard it rumoured and saw it announced, and my initial reaction was, well, he'll just play on the wing when Alex Good isn't playing fullback. They'll rotate a bit, but he'll be a winger. But you telling me that he definitely doesn't want to play on the wing.
Oh, I'm telling you, mate.
If you tell me it's fact, it is absolute fact, then yes, it is strange. And I'm sure they've paid him loads and loads of money, and he's worth it. But there is a chance he could be sitting on the bench for a bit. I thought with Ashton gone, Strettle went a couple of years ago or a year ago, whatever it was. Yeah. Ashton gone, I thought it was a good slot for a great ball runner on the wing there.
Yeah.
Maybe he didn't want to play on the wing, and he got offered more money than he could ever believe he'd be offered via email, and suddenly doesn't mind playing on the wing anymore.
Okay, we've got a couple of good questions here. Tom Horton, at Mr. _ Skinny Legs.
Oh, shame, innit?
Yeah. Don't forget your legs, boys.
Don't forget your legs. I mean, I know Bernie was right a couple of weeks ago. You don't see legs in a nightclub, but when you go on holiday and you're that bloke that clearly puts a bit of effort in up top, and you're walking around with legs that should be hanging out of a bird's nest, you're an embarrassment. It's your power base. Yeah?
Right, so Tom Horton, still think there's comedy in this. Which forward would you be happy as with your kicker? And which back could be an okay prop? So if you take the back for a prop.
Oh, okay. Well, did you see Mako Vunipola doing goal kicking the other day? He went around on Twitter.
I've got a better one though.
Have you?
Yeah.
Who's
Adam
yours?
Jones.
Good goal kicker.
Really good, mate. Not just off the floor, but out of the hand as well.
Is he really?
Yes. He even had a goal at a drop kick last year, I think, for the Blues.
Ospreys. Blues. Yeah.
Yeah, really skillful. But obviously doesn't get to see him. You don't often get to see him.
I can't imagine his legs going high enough to kick a ball.
It's just curls his toes, mate.
Curls his toes.
Yeah.
Flicks it through the top. No, he is
very, very good end over end kicker as well.
Yeah.
Loves it.
Yeah.
Does it as a warm up.
Okay, on, so we want a back as a prop, do we?
Yeah. Bastereau.
Yeah, it's got to be, isn't it? I still. Do you know what? Every now and again, he has a really good game, but I still think if you pick someone often enough, they'll eventually have a good game. So that isn't quite a gauge for me. I do not get the Bastereau thing. I know that wasn't the question, but I mean, if you can nail your tackles, if you can, you know, without, can't run without his legs type stuff, and you're not going to start going up top on him,
no,
you can completely rule him out as a threat, I think.
Right, we've been talking about the worst injuries. Robert Smith here on Twitter has just been saying about Horwell's injury. Do you see his finger?
Mm. Almost as bad as the finger that retired me, mate, that.
Yeah, was it?
Mine was like that, but 20 times worse.
To be fair, though, he did ask to play on.
Yeah, you asked to play on. I got asked to come off and wouldn't, so... Yeah, his was worse than mine as well. His was worse. That was horrific. I actually don't like seeing stuff like that. But he quite likes. He said something on Twitter like, "Looks like my days as a hand model are over." Tough cookie.
There's been a few questions. There's a question here from Mike Borkett. Who should Bath sign as a 10 if Ford leaves?
Yeah, interesting one.
Well, Preason's there.
Yeah.
And he's yet to feature that heavily, because obviously George Ford is at first choice 10 there.
Do you know, I still romantically like the idea of Freddie Burns playing for Bath.
Yeah,
really good player, Bath born and bred. The Burns are a big Bath family. It would mean a huge amount to him. But I guess there's, when you can pick anyone in the world effectively, you know, it's makes that less likely, I suppose. I still like that idea. I like the idea of a young kid playing as well, someone like a Rory Jennings, who's a young fly half. Gavin Hastings' son looks really good. But I think, again, if you're a team that's struggling for cash, then backing a youngster seems like a noble and financially, sort of fiscally sensible idea. But I think they probably won't, because they can buy anyone they want. And I've heard a bit of chat they're going after Aaron Cruden.
Really?
Which would, you know, I'm sure they'd have to pay a load of money, but they've got a load of money, so why not pay it? He'd be a nice one. Bowden Barrett would be good, but he ain't going to come, is he? He ain't going to come.
What a class player he is.
Oh, my days.
Like, to have that pace as well.
Yeah.
To go outside Conor Murray like he did, just cruising in.
Yeah. Absolute class.
Not sure if he got the ball down, though.
No, I wasn't, actually.
Give him the benefit of the doubt.
He's better than Dan Carter.
Possibly quite could be.
I reckon he is. And if he's not, he will be. The best, for me, he's not the best player in the All Blacks team, though. I think that...
I know what you're going to say.
Brody Retallick.
I knew you were going to say that.
He does more in a game than Bowden Barrett, I think. Or whatever, it doesn't matter who's better. Brody Retallick is on a different level from certainly any other second rows on the planet, and I include the English, South African big dogs in that, and even Alan Wynne-Jones. Brody Retallick is on a different level in terms of how often he influences a game and how few errors he makes. He is just freaky. He's just freaky, freaky good, and he's... hasn't played for a while, comes back in and is the best player on the field. Incredibly effective.
Okay.
What you got? You got some more questions there, Tommy?
Do you want to go political?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Should the RFU help Pacific Islands form a Super Rugby franchise? So this is all to do with the amount of money that the Pacific Islanders receive per games, as opposed to what Northern Hemisphere teams receive for games.
Yeah, I think they should. I think all the tier one unions.
This is from Robin Whitefield, by the way.
Hello, Robin.
Hi, mate.
I think that broadly helping out tier two, tier three nations is the way to go. And I think you don't just help Fiji. Then, you know, there's a lot of other nations you've got to help. Then you've got the other South Sea Islands. You've got Georgia. You know, it kind of keeps going.
Yeah.
But I think that a contribution from hugely or, you know, nicely profitable tier one rugby unions to tier two or tier three or whatever lower tier unions is the way to go. And I think it doesn't send the right message. It's the right behaviour. It's the haves helping the have-lesses, and I think it should always be that way.
Okay. David Cottrell Jones has asked us on Twitter, who at the Scotland team do you think deserves a Lions place at the moment? So
WP Nell.
You go to the forwards then.
Yeah, yep. WP Nell, Johnny Gray, Hardy.
Really?
Hardy in the back row.
What, over the other sevens?
Big squad.
You can't just name any Scotland player.
I do what I like, mate.
Oh, okay, fine.
I do what I like. Oh, who's the other? I've completely forgotten the name of the other guy I really like. Fraser. No, Hamish. Oh, God.
Scott Hastings. Gavin Hastings.
The back. The,
Gregor Townsend.
The back row, the flanker.
Barkley.
No.
Rennie.
No. The other lad. I'll come back to it in a minute. I've completely drawn a blank. Okay. Had too much lunch. But I really like him. So yeah, WP Nail has to go. I think if he's fit, Alistair Dickinson is an outside shot.
Really? Okay.
Yes, because nice. The new laws really suit him.
Yeah.
He's very, very fit, very powerful and explosive, but he's very, very fit. So against New Zealand in the Lions trip, who don't have a very good scrum.
Yes.
They haven't had for a while and it's not getting any better. I don't think you need the best scrummaging units in the world. So this is the sort of trip that, you know, a Dai Young or a Julian White might miss out on, because you can take someone who perhaps doesn't scrummage quite as well. You might take a Tony Buckley on a trip like this. Remember Tony Buckley?
Yeah.
Doesn't scrummage as well, but does huge amounts around the field, because the All Blacks can scrummage reasonably well. Joe Moody's getting better, but they're not a force. Owen Franks is not a force.
But you want someone who's mobile around the park, who's not going to get tired, make tackles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think he's an outside choice. Yeah, Johnny Gray is... verging on a phenomenon in terms of the amount of work he does. He's a brilliant, brilliant second rower.
Okay.
His brother Richie, of course, is close, but bear in mind the other locks around the home nations. I think only Johnny will go. And I'll come back. Hamish Watson. Have I got it? I've completely forgotten this guy's name. Mm. You talk about yours, and I'm going to look it up on Tinterweb.
Okay, so back-wise, you have to take Stuart Hogg. Is there a more exciting 15 than him at the moment? Ball in hand, incredible, elusive, fast. Offload game, the work, slots in a 10, so he's definitely going to go with fit. I think Tommy Seymour has a real good chance of making it. Some great form last year in the Six Nations, this year so far. Alex Dunbar could be an outside shot if he keeps his form up. Possibly not Maitland at the moment. I think there might be better wingers. That's not to say his form won't pick up. So for me, they're the three that I can see making it. I think we'll see a huge Scottish contingent in this year's or next year's Lions tour.
I do. It was Hamish Watson. Yes. Brilliant player. Yeah, I think you're right. I think we'll see a lot more than people think. And it's funny, Ireland play really well against the All Blacks but don't win at the weekend. And there's lots of what Irish fans tweeted. You think the Irish lads are disappointed now? Wait till Gatland ignores them come Lions selection. You know, it's quite an interesting one, because I think things can change hugely, and the Six Nations becomes way more important than the All Internationals in terms of Lions selection. But then, you know, I think that if things remain roughly as they are, then there ain't many Welsh players going compared with last time. Frankly, there's a lot fewer, and there are a lot more Irish and Scottish players going than last time, is what I would guess. Would you go with that?
Yeah, no, I would go with that. Hugh David wants to know, on current form, how do you see the Six Nations finishing up 1-6? So who's going to finish first?
England.
I would agree. Who's going to finish sixth?
Although England play Ireland away in Dublin.
Yeah. Who? You said England.
I've said England. Ireland 2.
Italy 6, yeah?
Italy 6, yeah. God,
okay,
yeah.
So you want Ireland 2. Wales 3. Are you happy with that?
No. Scotland 3.
Okay, I'm going to say Wales 3. You're going Scotland 3. Who's 4 then?
I'll say Wales, then France.
Okay.
So I'll say Wales 4, France 5.
Okay. I'll go with the same.
You'll go Scotland 4, France 5.
Scotland 4, France 5. Yeah.
It's quite confusing, actually.
Yeah, we got there in the end.
A lot of like media types who do podcasts and shows would plan this sort of stuff and actually have it written down. This is who we voted for, but we are making this up as we go along, and we kind of prefer it that way, because
Mavericks, we're off the cuff.
Mavericks slash, are we lazy? Yeah. Here's a really interesting question, actually.
Can't
I really
wait.
Like this one.
Let's go.
It's from Gareth Thomas on Twitter, at Thomas Gareth. Not the real one.
Not Alfie.
Okay. No, he was meant to come along today, but he got stuck in Barry. Why don't referees...
No, actually, that's a lie.
Oh, where is he?
Chester.
No. Got stuck in Warwick.
Sydney.
Anyway,
it's not in Australia.
right. What? Right, why don't referees police tackle laws during the act of scoring, i.e. Johnny Sexton's swinging arm around Beauden Barrett's neck? It's a funny one. Apart from a horrible knee drop,
yes,
you seem to be able to do anything to a scoring player. So, I mean, I think we've probably all done it at some point. Doesn't make it right. The guy's scoring anyway, so you're trying to get over there in time, and you can pretend you're trying to knock the ball out of his hand, but you actually try and chin the bloke as he's landing, or just land one for the sake of it.
Yeah.
It's funny, isn't it? Why don't they police that?
You use a swinging arm because you're trying to knock the ball out of someone's hand, basically, aren't you? You aim for the ball.
That could be your excuse.
If it hits their jaw, you know, it's because the guy was in the motion of going down to the floor. But a lot of the time as well, you're trying to get underneath the ball, so you're trying to climb over somebody to stop them from grounding the ball, so you have to get it, trying to get underneath them. But you're right. I mean, you see some horrific stuff sometimes, though, don't you, when someone's scoring a try? And
yeah. Because you could easily restart the game with a penalty for a swinging arm in the act of scoring.
Well, we saw it with George North. Remember, he got knocked out. Nathan Hughes ran over the top of him, clipped his jaw. So
yeah, but I mean, this divides opinion. That was an accident. I mean,
I agree. It was an accident.
Yeah, so it doesn't split opinion at all.
No,
not here.
Not here.
Didn't split any opinion whatsoever.
So leading up to this weekend, mate.
Yeah,
you got Argentina.
Yeah,
they're not going to pose too many threats for you. You're still going to bet on England.
I think that. Yeah, they're not going to pose too many threats. I think they're potentially a really creative team, but
they are. They play with a lot of width. They play with a lot of skill. They're fairly physical up front. Their game they played here at the Prince Palace Stadium against Ireland was absolutely incredible. It's the best I've seen them play.
Yeah,
Argentina.
They
were phenomenal. But
I hope we see that Argentina this weekend. We haven't quite seen it yet.
No, we haven't.
This autumn,
right.
I want them to be big and creative and powerful. But I don't think they really are at the moment. I don't think their scrummage is anywhere near the force it was. I don't think teams are scared of making handling errors because it hands them set-piece ball anymore. I think they're very, very sort of big, dense men around the breakdown, and they're very hard to shift. They commit hard to the breakdown. If they commit, they commit hard, and they take a lot of energy out of attacking teams. If attacking teams want to sort of keep on generating quick ball, it can become really, really tiring to do so against Argentina. But I think England are in, you know, sufficiently strong form that this should be a bruising encounter, if not a challenging one, really.
So Ireland have got Australia, and this is going to be a huge game, because Ireland are missing Henshaw at 12, definitely. I think they're missing Sexton at 10, which means Paddy Jackson's going to come in. I'm not sure where they're going to play Gary Ringrose, who, look out for him.
Yeah.
He came on last week and did not look out of place whatsoever.
Yeah, he looked really good.
He looked really good. He's got pace, he's got skill.
He looks super confident as well.
Yeah, he does. He looks a little bit like, you know, Brian O'Driscoll, that type of player.
Taller, though.
Yes.
Not as pallid, either.
Better looking. We can't be too rude, because he might be on the show next week.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
If we can tie him down.
Yeah, he's not as handsome as Dricko, and he's not as charismatic, is he? Not that I've met him.
No, he's not. So I'm actually going to go for an Australia win in Dublin.
Yeah, I really, really, really want Ireland to win.
I hope they win. Yeah, I do hope Ireland win, but I think Australia will be a little bit too strong, especially with all the players they rested last week as well.
Yeah, I often think you can separate the great teams from the potentially great, or merely the very good, by how often they're able to perform at a certain level, and not their best possible level, but their kind of mean level. And I wonder if Ireland are emotionally spent after their sort of rematch against the All Blacks. I wonder, and I hope they're not. I hope they're as sort of pumped for this one, as focused for this one, as they were for the All Blacks games. And I really, really want Ireland to win. I just don't think they're going to. I agree with you. So let's hope that a week from now we're back here eating humble Welsh cakes, because we were wrong.
France, New Zealand?
Ah, easy.
I thought it was some French then.
Ah, it was. easy.
Yeah.
Easy for
New Zealand.
Les Noirs.
Yeah. Wales, South Africa.
Wales have to win. South Africa hasn't been this bad in generations.
Both teams have to win. I think more so South Africa than Wales.
Yeah, but I think South Africa have always got that kind of political situation, get out, whereas Wales don't have that. They've just got pure pressure from the people. So I don't know. I feel like if Wales have got a pop at beating the Springboks, it's now.
Yeah, it's right now.
Who was that guy just walked in? This is what happens when you... don't you know him? You're from Wales.
George North, he wants an autograph.
George North.
Selfie.
Get out.
The issue for me with Wales is how they're going to play at the weekend. Are they going to play... Are they going to try something different and play with width and try and create tries and create space out wide, or are they going to go back to what they know, which is the game line battle?
Crash, bang, wallop, same way, around the corner, boop, 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 boop.
Whichever plan they go with, their fundamentals and basics have to be so much better.
Yeah.
It was very average on the weekend. Just looking after the ball in contact, just not throwing, shoving shit on, you call it. You know, yeah. So if you receive one bad pass, you don't throw another bad pass. Concentration levels need to up. They've certainly got the talent out there, and you can see the boys training now on the field. The amount of lions they've got and the amount of experience they've got in that team.
Yeah. And they are training beneath us now on the field,
yeah,
in the rain at the Principality as we sit up here in the box with bits of scraps of lunch scattered all over the place and a mince pie.
But part of me, most of me, wants to see Wales play with a different ambition, with a different mindset.
What are the odds, though?
It's going to take time, but why not do it now in preparation for the Six Nations? At some stage in a calendar year, you know, Wales are going to have to start from the beginning of how to break teams down and how to attack. So why not do it now?
Yeah.
You know, it should have been done through the start of the autumn campaign. You have to have two ball players in your back line to be able to do that. So whether they go with Sam Davies at 10, Dan Brigger at 12, or whether they stick with Dan Brigger at 10 and put Scott Williams in at 12, I don't know which way Rob Howley is going to go with this. Mm. But in order to score tries, they have to have two ball players. Gone are the days where I think we can just bully teams with our physical presence.
Can't bully teams anymore.
We have to mentally challenge defenders. And also do that, we need that more attacking, potent philosophy on the way to play rugby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. I agree with you, Tommy.
Perfect.
I agree with you. I reckon we've probably done enough, do you? This has been quite a serious rugby one.
I know.
We're better than that.
We haven't had too many...
But there was just so much rugger to talk about.
Storyvilles, have we?
No, but there was wasn't so Jack and Nori, but there was so much rugby to talk about, and we are kind of a rugby podcast, so
there's loads of different ways to contact us as well. We try and get through as many questions as we can. You can go on Twitter, which is @flatsandshanks. You can email us, which is contact@flatsandshanks.com. The website,
flatsandshanks.com, and there's a Facebook page.
And we are going to do some Facebook Live podcast soon. We hope to be doing one with Nigel Owens in December. He's agreed.
Yeah.
He signed a contract, or just by saying yeah, that's fine.
Now, if he doesn't come, we will sue him. I will sue him.
He has basically said yes, I'm there on text, and for me that is a contract. If he breaks it, I'll hunt him down
and end him.
And yeah, I will
end him.
I'll beat him.
Yeah, and if you like our podcast, please do go onto iTunes and review
you
it for
have
us.
To. You have to go on
and
there.
If you review it with full marks, we send you £10.
We might even start reading out some of the reviews.
Oh yeah,
so make them good.
If you do some good reviews, we'll start reading them out. If they're really rude and they don't give us 5 stars, then do you do it with stars? I don't know. I make
yes,
that up.
Yes, you do.
Then up yours, all right? We're
brown
not reading
ones.
It.
No, they're gold.
Gold, right? Gold. Jesus Christ! It's like being at McDonald's. There are other fast food outlets available. They're just not as tasty.
Yeah, yeah.
I had a McDonald's the other night. I was with Mark Durden-Smith after we went to Sale Sharks.
You had a pizza last night.
I know, mate. Long old day. I've had a terrible couple of days in nutrition.
But I asked Flats what pizza he had, and he said, I went for ham and pineapple, a little bit of sweet corn. Well, that's a bit strange for you, mate. I thought you would have gone for the mighty meaty.
The meat feast.
The meat feast. And he said, no, it's the meat. It's not very good quality, is it?
you're chopping a Domino's in front of the telly.
All that cheese and bread going down you, the last thing on your mind.
Do you know what? And this is
no, I don't.
You do know what? This is. I actually had a load of food ready for last night, and this is.
God's honest.
You know this. Do you know when someone makes an anonymous donation to charity but tells everyone about it?
Yeah.
There's a bus shelter, a bus stop near me, an old one.
It's like those who go to CrossFit and have to put it on Twitter.
Yeah. What's the point in going if you don't tell everyone? There's this. There's a homeless guy that has been living for a couple of months underneath a stone. Disused stone bus shelter near my house outside Bath, and he's always friendly, sitting up and like walk the kids to school.
Sounds like Stonehenge, mate.
A little bit. Yeah. And he's always nice to the kids and stuff. You just feel for this guy. And anyway, I had this nice food and I'd made it in preparation. And I said to my kids in the morning before I took them to school yesterday morning, being Monday morning, I said, girls all look at that for daddy late, because their mum, my wife, was away for the night working in London, so she says.
Yeah.
And I said, that's all daddy's, no one's getting any of that. Can we have some? No, so get out of it, it's all mine. And they said, daddy, if you had a really big heart, you'd give it to the man with no home.
Did you?
Yeah, what'd you do? So I took a big flask of coffee and we went on the way to school, and the girls got out and they're like, we went over to the guy to give him a load of food, and he had loads of food there already, as it happened. Some other people had dropped it off.
Hey, that's nice.
And the girls were like, is that your bed? They said, you've got lovely views. At least you. And then he said, yeah, it's a bit cold though, at least you've got a roof. Some people don't have roofs. And then the other one, who's four, said, some people don't even have floors. So actually they do have floors, everyone's got a floor, like you can, unless you're at sea, even at sea you can find a floor. But that's why I ended up with no food last night and got the pizzas in.
See,
so
it's not right what they say about you. You're actually a decent guy, mate.
Yeah, but I've made sure everyone knows about it, that's the other thing.
Yeah.
Wow. So apologies for self-promotion, but
somebody's going to heaven.
I'm also horrible to some people. Yeah. So there you are.
That's true.
So see you next week.
Yeah, goodbye.
Ta-da.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.